Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, friends, and welcome to this edition of The Spread presented by the Red Light Sports Network. I am your host, J.A., the Managing Director and co-founder of Cover That Spread, and I am joined by my good friend, my sports companion, and all-around Game of Thrones connoisseur, the Catacho. How's it going, my friend?
I'm doing all right.
Before I even let you get into any World Cup talk, I have one question. This is probably the most important thing we're going to talk about all night. Is Jon Snow coming back?
You know, from everything that I've seen, he's dead, but some of the other actors from the show have said that there's still people around that could, you know, bring him back to life, as well as him appearing at a cast photo shoot recently where they're beginning to film. So never know what's going to happen on that show.
I mean, between now and then, we're obviously going to get some sort of reports about him being on set or being on location or him making some... You know, he's probably going to be the most stalked person over the next 9 months. You know, so, I mean, we will know every movement that Kit makes, and we'll see if he's really dead or not. I personally don't think so, only because there's no way that you go killing a White Walker only to be then killed by a little kid in the next episode. It's just not going to happen.
Right.
So, we got that out of the way. Next big question is about True Detective, and the first two episodes have been a little slow. I felt like they've done a really good teaser at the end of each episode to bring you back. My thing with this show this season, and last season, I binge-watched it. I think I saved up like 5 or 6 episodes, watched those, and I watched the last 4 live, and that worked out really well. This year, I haven't been doing that. Is this a show that just needs to be binge-watched? Because there's so much that goes on in between the action. So I think it's better if you binge watch it, watch a bunch of episodes at one time, and you see the entire story unfold as opposed to having to wait a week in between. Would you agree with that?
I would agree with that. I binge watched it last year myself, and I felt like that was much better than, you know, waiting week to week and speculating on what was going to happen. Being able to put them all together, you know, within a couple of days, really laid everything out, picture perfect and clear for you so you could really see how the story played out and not forget any type of minor details.
Yeah, I'm right with you on that. I totally agree. So, all right, we've gotten those two out of the way. Let's get back to the show. So, as always, we're going to discuss some women's World Cup. We're going to talk about some Copa America, a little MLB, a little NFL, and anything else that comes up along the way. This program and the website, coverthatspread.com, is for entertainment purposes only, and any questions that you have regarding the legality of gambling and online wagering should be directed to your local and state legislative offices. However, if you do have the ability and wish to place wagers with a licensed bookmaker, please do so responsibly, and be sure to square up with Uncle Sam on April 15th. Sports wagering, just like every other risk-based investment, options, derivatives, and hedge funds, just to name a few, all these can lead to losses, so you must assess your own risk tolerance before you even start. If you guys want to get in touch with the show, there's several ways you can do it. Send me an email, thespread@coverthatspread.com. You can also find me on Twitter, @CoverThatSpread, spelled S-P-R-D. at the spread JA. You can find Catracho at the Catracho, TheCatracho. He is on fire, guys, and he is posting all of his soccer plays on Twitter, so be sure to follow him, because if you want to grow your bankroll during leading up into the NFL season, follow him, get in on his plays, because these are just can't misses right now. If you're listening live and you want to call in, 917-932-1779 is how you do that. I was just talking to Troy a couple of days ago, and we will be getting back on the Fantasy Freeway in the near future, maybe even this weekend. So we will be tweeting out about that as well. For those of you who are listening to the show, we had to take a little bit of time off due to some personal reasons between both of us. So, you know, we're getting ready to jump back on there and get you guys prepped for the NFL season. Even though we're going to talk a lot of college football fantasy. So, you know, a lot of fun, a lot going on right now. I should say a lot to prepare for right now, because we're kind of in the in-between, right, in-between seasons. We just had the NBA and the NHL conclude. We do have a lot of soccer action going on, and this is where we're going to bring Catracho back on to talk about some of these soccer plays that he's got coming up. You know, we've discussed the MLB season has started. We're wrapping up, it looks like, with Copa America. We also have the Women's World Cup. Is this the best time of year for a soccer fan?
You know, this is a really good time for a soccer fan. I don't know if I would say it's the best time of year. I believe the best time of year is when the leagues are finishing up and you got the Champions League finishing up as well, but this is pretty close to as good as it gets. You know, like you said, the Women's World Cup is finishing, Copa America is finishing, and then here in the U.S. we'll have the Gold Cup starting in just over a week. So we'll be looking to get those plays out as well. That's one that I'm not sure if I tweeted it out yet or not, but I believe I did, picking the U.S. men to win the Gold Cup. So if nobody's gotten on that yet, I would suggest getting on that, because they are a plus, I want to say 140 at the time I put it in. So if you can get that on there, I would get on there as fast as possible.
I am taking a look to see where that is right now. So does MLS, to all the other leagues, kind of take a little pause while this tournament's going on?
So the MLS won't be taking a break. They are not a FIFA-regulated league, so they don't always abide by the FIFA, like, scheduled breaks. The league down in Brazil doesn't really take breaks during the Copa America either. The only time they really take a break is during the FIFA World Cup. Those leagues would take a break. So we'll still be seeing a lot of action going on in the MLS and down in South America.
So who will actually be playing? Like, do players just kind of take off from their MLS teams, or how does that work? But I guess who's on the roster then, if we're not taking breaks in these leagues?
Right. So it'll happen that a lot of the players from the domestic league will be, you know, performing national team duty. So you'll see guys like Clint Dempsey, Jozy Altidore, Michael Bradley, Nick Raimondo, Kyle Beckerman, some of the bigger name guys from the club teams here with Seattle, Toronto, all those teams that are going to be playing for the national team. So, you know, their spots are, you know, going to be taken. Somebody else will be filling the role that might not be as good. So you'll be looking at some of the teams that are at the top of the league might falter a little bit while these guys are away on national team duty.
All right. Well, I'm looking right now at the line, and we've got USA to win this at plus 145. Slight favorite above Mexico, who is at plus 150. Costa Rica is at plus 500. Panama or Honduras is at plus 1316. Canada, Jamaica, or Trinidad plus 3992, and any other country is listed at plus 8050. So nice little payout on those last two that I mentioned. Even Panama or Honduras going at plus 1316 is a pretty good number. Outside of the U.S., who you like to win this, what do you think, well, who's a good dark horse to be playing? Like, if you're just talking about a pure speculative bet, where would you be putting money?
So if I wasn't placing money on the U.S. or Mexico, Costa Rica and Panama would probably be the next two best bets. Mexico just finished up playing in the Copa America. They did not have their full squad there because they were resting some guys in preparation for the Gold Cup. See them, you know, taking that experience from some of the lesser guys and then putting in some of the better guys back on the team, that they'll be really ready for this tournament. The U.S. has been really hot, though, so I think, you know, they're still my favorite. But Costa Rica was really the surprise for a lot of people in the World Cup last year. A lot of those guys will be in the Gold Cup this year, so I could see that being a really strong side, you know, that Mexico or the U.S. is really going to struggle against. And then Panama does have some goal scorers on the team. If healthy, they'll be able to put up a good fight as well. Honduras just does not have the scoring ability. They are a very good defensive team, very chippy, very physical. They kind of get in the heads of a lot of their opponents. So look for teams to be struggling against them as well. We could see a lot of draws against Honduras.
So if we're looking at game-by-game situation, you're saying Honduras would be a very good draw play maybe to make on a game-by-game basis.
Right.
So when you're looking at this out ahead of the tournament, as, you know, the tournament hasn't started, we've got a week, what are you thinking about different ways that you're going to approach this? Like, you know, when I'm starting to break down the NFL right now, I'm looking at a team like Jacksonville and I'm thinking, you know, anytime that they're getting more than 10 points, anytime they're double-digit underdogs, I'm going to start taking a look at them and probably just throwing down money, knowing that they're good enough to probably keep some games closer than people think. So, you know, I kind of have that in the back of my head going into the season. Do you approach a tournament like this in a similar way? Maybe there's a team that anytime you're going to get them more than plus 150, you're just going to jump on it the minute you see it?
Yeah, there'll be a lot of that going on. You know, a lot of it has to do with how the groups are laid out as well. So we'll be, you know, like you said, with the NFL, we'll be taking a closer look at that as it gets closer. There may be some guys that all of a sudden pop up injured as well that could sway the groups a little bit. But, yeah, definitely depending on who they're playing against, and like you said, you know, if it's over a plus 150, plus 200, that might be a team that you take a look at, which is one of the things that we're looking at tonight with the Women's World Cup. Japan is a favorite against England, but not by that much, and they haven't necessarily been dominant in this World Cup. So we're leaning on England tonight with a money line, I believe, of plus 320. So that's, you know, a play that you would look at in this instant where you say, all right, England's played really well in this World Cup. You know, they, I think, only lost to France. But other than that, they've played extremely well. So I look at them to pull off an upset against Japan this evening.
All right, I like it. I like upsets. And then what other plays do you have coming up? I know you'd mentioned a couple tonight that you liked. What else do you have out there?
Right. So for tonight as well, Mexico and Honduras are playing in a friendly. So I'm going with a draw in that game. This will be kind of a warm-up for both teams. It's not necessarily a big deal if one wins or loses other than bragging rights heading into the Gold Cup. But Honduras played surprisingly well against Brazil in their last friendly. Mexico did not play that well again, as I said, down in the Copa America. So we'll be looking for Honduras to really come in physical, get into the heads of the guys from Mexico, which are really volatile, and pull off a draw in this game. Then looking down in Brazil, we have quite a few games going on. One of the first ones, I believe it should be off the books by now, was Vasco against Avaí. We went with Avaí. They've played extremely well over the last few games, even away. Not sure why they were an underdog in this game, but we picked them. Another pick was Palmeiras. We got the money line on them. Joinville versus Flamengo, we have a draw. And then Atletico PR against São Paulo, we have Atletico pulling off an upset in that one as well. So those are the picks for this evening.
And then I'm sorry, did you say you do have one for the Copa America final?
Yes, we have Argentina over Chile in the final. There's also a third place game that will be going on Friday that we'll be tweeting out a pick for beforehand. Not extremely happy with the lines right now. It's more of a pick between Paraguay and Peru. Peru has been playing extremely well, surprisingly, in the tournament. So that could be the one that we go with. But just kind of wait and see if the line moves a little bit before we make that play official. But Argentina is the official play for the final.
Okay. So what's the, I guess, what is the benefit of taking, I'm looking here right now, Peru is at, for the spread, it's pick at minus 138, but the odds for them to win are plus 135. What would be the benefit of taking one over the other? Like, because if you're taking them at pick, why wouldn't you just take them on the money line?
Right. So that's one of the strange things about soccer. You know, it doesn't make much sense for you to play the pick rather than playing the actual money line because there's no, you know, goal differential involved. If you're just doing a straight-up pick, you might as well just be going with the money line. So that's, you know, what we lean on the most. Unless it's really a bigger club, I haven't really played too much of the spreads. And we've gone more with the over-under and money line or draw play.
And finally, let's just talk a little bit about goal totals. We see in the third-place game, Paraguay and Peru, it's at 3. For the final, Argentina-Chile, it's at 2.5. What are you thinking? Would you approach at either of these, at those numbers?
Right, so Argentina hadn't really been scoring too many goals in the tournament, but they weren't allowing very many as well. I think the most they allowed was 2 against Paraguay, and that was at the beginning of the tournament. Kind of a shocker, really, because they were up 2-0, and then they let Paraguay back into it. But after that, the defense really, you know, played well. The offense was still kind of sputtering, and they were only scoring a goal a game. So really to see them take off in that last game and put 6 goals in was a real surprise because that was one of the ones that we were going with under 2.5, which was a great plus money play. But unfortunately, you know, they decided to finally kick it into gear and put the ball in the back of the net. So with the Argentina-Chile, I think I might play that one at over 2.5. You know, I could see it being a 1-1 draw and going into extra time with one of the teams pulling off a goal when it's needed most. So that's what I would be looking at with that one because Argentina did let in a goal against Paraguay last game, even though Paraguay was down to playing with 10 men due to a red card. So I see that one being 1-1 and then somebody pulling off a goal in the at the end of the game or an extra time to win it. And then down with, like you said, with Peru and Paraguay, both of them had been scoring goals. So I could see that one being at over 3 as well. But we'll see if there's any play in that before, you know, it comes closer to Friday and Saturday before we tweet out those picks for the over-unders.
Okay. All right. Well, we will be keeping an eye on those. I will make sure we get those tweeted, retweeted, and posted everywhere we can go. So good info on soccer. Like we were saying, you know, it is a big time with the amount of tournaments that are going on right now. And it's going to be a fun summer with all of that. Now, on that same subject of being in summertime, it is baseball. We have not covered as much baseball as we should have over the last couple of weeks. And, you know, it's been a lot of my fault because we haven't just been able to do the show as often. You know, we've had to take a couple of weeks off here and there. And, you know, we're going to be definitely getting this back going on a weekly basis going forward. So, you know, we're going to have a little more baseball stuff. And not everyone enjoys betting baseball. You know, it's a tough thing to do. It's a daily grind. The thing I love about football is you do have a couple of days. If you have a bad Sunday, you can kind of, like, vent about it for 2 or 3 days, get back on that horse Thursday night, and you're feeling good by Friday. So, you know, you don't have that luxury in baseball. Or if you do have that luxury, you know, you get back on it, and things just aren't turning out as well as they should. So, first things first, let's get a play out here because I do have an official play that is going out tonight, and that is under 8.5 for Pittsburgh versus Detroit. It is a 7:08 first pitch Eastern time, so you've got about 17 minutes until that starts. Make sure you guys get that play in. We are going under 8.5. It's a 5-unit play. Really liking the pitching matchup here, so I'm expecting this one to be in the 3-2 range, maybe 4-2, but a lot of room to play with 8.5 runs. So I'm really liking the under in this one. What I want to do is kind of take a look at where the projections were at the beginning of the season and seeing where some of these teams are right now, because I'm trying to find value over the second half of the season when it comes to baseball. So if we start this off in the National League and go through the National League East, you know, the Mets had the really hot start. They've cooled off. The Nationals have come on, but even the Nationals, well, let me say this. The Nationals are 9-1 in their last 10 games, and they've definitely made a real good push to pass up the Mets. Can't take that away from the Nationals, but really before this 10-game or, you know, 15 games, however long it's been that they've been on this streak, Nationals weren't doing a whole lot, and they'd hit some good spots and they'd hit some bad spots. You know, the Nationals, if we look at FanGraphs and Baseball Prospectus, they were projected to win 93 and 92 games this season. Right now, they're sitting at 43, and we're at about the midway point. They've played 77 games, so they're just under the halfway point there. That means of those 43 wins, if we just went and flat out doubled it, we'd be looking at 86, which is still short of the 92 or the 93 win total projection. So I do think that the best baseball for the Nationals is still ahead of them this season. I think that could be a real good play going forward if you're just looking at it as strictly who has the best chance to put up some good numbers. Now, on the flip side, the Mets, they've won 40 games of their 78 games played so far. They were projected to win 81 and 83 games. So they're pretty much right on pace to what they were, you know, projected to do. And if it's me, I'm thinking the Mets are going to continue to regress a little bit. I just don't think they have the bats that are needed to get them through the AL East right now. So the Mets, I think, would be a good pass in the second half, maybe even a good sell. The Braves have right now 36 wins. Again, they're right in that 80-win range. I think that they could be a decent play late in the season, but most likely I'll be passing on them. Now let's look at some of these lower teams. The Marlins, they were projected at 80 and 81 wins on FanGraphs and Baseball Prospectus. Right now they're sitting at 32 through 78 games, which means if we double that, that's 64 wins. That's about 16 wins lower than what they were projected. I'm thinking a team like the Marlins could be a really good play if you're just saying, I want to not think about who I'm playing in baseball, and I'm just going to play someone every day. I think the Marlins are going to get really good juice on them night in and night out, and you could really take advantage of them getting hot in the second half of the season, because I think they could be one of those teams. They definitely have the offense if they start swinging better. So, you know, there's a lot of ifs there. The Marlins, we all know the Marlins aren't that great, but if you look at the projections for them to win 80 games, and right now they're sitting at 32, I think there could be a lot more plus to the Marlins in the second half of the season than most people would expect. Now, I've been looking over some of the other teams as well. We've got, you know, we've got the Reds. They were expected to be around 75 wins. Right now they're sitting at 36. So that's pretty much where you would expect them to be. The Brewers, they're sitting at 31 wins right now. If we look at their projections, 79 and 81, there could be a lot of value playing the Brewers in the second half of the season here. Now, the Brewers had a terrible April and not a very good May. So we're starting to see them make up a little bit of ground. It may be a good time to just start betting them blindly, especially when you're getting the plus money. Over in the NL West, let's see who we've got here. The Dodgers are at 44 wins. The Giants are at 42. Dodgers projected 91 in Fangraphs and 98 on Baseball Prospectus. So a little bit of room there for the Dodgers. But, again, I don't think you're going to have value day in and day out. The Giants, sitting at 80 and 84 with Fangraphs and Baseball Prospectus. Right now they're at 42 wins, so pretty much right where they should be. So I'm not thinking that the Giants would be a good play every night blindly. The Diamondbacks, Padres, and Rockies, 37, 37, and 34 wins. Diamondbacks are projected at 75, so they're pretty much right there. The Padres were projected at 83 and 84 wins. They're sitting at 37 right now. So if we double 37, we're at 74, and that's about a 10-game buffer between where they should be or where they were projected to be and where they are looking like they're going to be. So Padres could be a good play. I know a lot of people have been really discouraged by the Padres' inconsistency. I know I've gotten burned by them a couple times, but if you think about it in a way that you could get some good plus money throughout the rest of the second half of the season, Padres could be a good play as well. The Rockies, they were projected at 74 and 71 wins. They're at 34. That's probably about right. And, you know, if you want to try to figure out that Rockies team with the way that their offense plays some nights and then absolutely disappears for long stretches, but please be my guest. That's something I do not want to have any part of. Let's start with the American League East now. The Red Sox, they're at 36 wins. They have played 80 games, so pretty much exactly halfway. They are on pace for 72 wins. Fangraphs had them at 86. Baseball Prospectus had them at 88. That's a lot of room right there. Red Sox could be a really good play late in the season, see if they can make a good push or not. But, you know, that's a pretty good gap between what they're projected and what they're on pace to get. We've got the Blue Jays are at 42 wins. The Rays are at 42 wins. Yankees and Orioles are both at 41. So, you know, that little cluster of teams, pretty much right where they were expecting to be. The Orioles, 79 wins on both sites. You know, they're a little above that pace, but I think they're probably about right. The Rays, they were at 81 and 87 projected wins. Right now they're on pace for about 84, 85. I was taking the Rays under 79 and a half wins this season. I did not think they were going to be as good as they have been, especially waiting for a lot of the pitchers to come back, and I just didn't feel like they had the offense. But they are getting things done down here in Tampa. So, you know, the Rays, they're right on pace to where they should be. So I don't think there's a value play to be playing them night in and night out. but you know, they've been a little better than expected. The Yankees.
Now, are you saying that to get the Rays fans riled up down there as well, or is that something that you strongly believed in?
Oh, you know what? I strongly believe that the Rays really were not that good this year. And Chris Archer, although I felt like he was a great pitcher, I did not feel that he was going to be enough to carry this team, and so far he has been. And, you know, riling up, I'll leave that one to the Lightning next time they're in the NHL Finals playing against the Blackhawks. But, yeah, for the most part, I did not think very highly of the Rays going into this season. But good catch. That was a real good catch because you're absolutely right. I love to rile up the Tampa Bay fans at any chance that I have. So let's move on. We've got the AL Central. The team I think that has some value is the White Sox and the Indians. Indians are at 35 wins. White Sox are at 33 wins. White Sox were projected between 78 on both sides. So they're a little below that. The Indians, they were projected at 84-80. So they're 35 wins. That leaves about a 10 to 12 game buffer that I think that they are going to make up in the second half. So, you know, the Indians, I think, could be a really good play down the stretch. Finally, the Astros. Let's talk about them. They were projected to be at 78 and 77 wins. Right now they're at 46. They've definitely cooled down over the last month. This may be a real good time to start selling on the Astros. Now, unfortunately, you're probably not going to get a whole lot of value out of it regularly. But if you pick the right spots to sell them, that could be a real good play. Angels, on the other hand, they were projected 87 and 91 wins. Right now they're sitting at 41. So I think the Angels could be a real good buy throughout the rest of the season. Mariners, a lot of people were high on them going into the season. They're at 87 wins was their projected total. They're sitting at 36. So the Mariners, if they can get their act together, could be a real good play day in and day out. And the Athletics, they were right around 83, 84 wins. They're sitting at 35. I think the Angels are going to start selling some pieces. I think the Athletics are going to start selling off some pieces here. And I don't see them getting anywhere near that 84 win total. So that's my little baseball knowledge as we're approaching the halfway point. We'll keep an eye on these as the season goes on. And make sure we're getting a little segment in each week to discuss these projected win totals. Because in baseball, due to the size and due to the amount of games that they play, you know, it's a lot. You'd be surprised how many teams end up within a couple of games of their projected win totals at the end of the season. So a lot of value there. So on to the NFL. And you've talked about this. I've talked about this. We've text each other a lot. You know, we've got value on the board, and I think now that we are past the draft, we're pretty much past the big points of free agency, I feel like we've gotten to be in a pretty good place to know what each team is going to look like. So we've talked about the both Eastern divisions in the AFC and the NFC. Let's talk about the AFC North. And this is a, an interesting division, the way it's kind of shaken out the last couple of years. You've got a Cleveland team that is just in really bad shape. You know, there's nothing really much about Cleveland I like. Cincinnati seems like they took a step back last season, although they did make the playoffs again. You know, I don't think anyone really felt comfortable with them. The Ravens seemed like they really had things together some weeks, seemed like they were an absolute disaster other weeks. And then the Steelers are the Steelers. And, you know, no matter how bad things seem like they are going in Pittsburgh, they're always right there in playoff contention come December. So if we look at the division, Ravens plus 145 to win it, Steelers plus 195, Bengals plus 214, and the Browns at plus 1195. Who do you like out of those four teams to win the division?
You know, I'm really looking at Pittsburgh. Like you said, they're never really out of it. You know, Cincinnati, was good last year, but they weren't great, which has been the case over the last few seasons with them as well. And then Baltimore, you know, you never really know what you're going to get out of them either, besides a really strong defense. The whole ordeal with Ray Rice last year, you know, that was a big deal that kind of caused some turmoil. So I think Pittsburgh would be my best bet to win the division, and I think Cleveland is really going to take a step back this year. 7-9 last year isn't really a bad record, but this year I don't think they're going to get anything around that number.
Yeah, I'm right with you with Cleveland. I just don't see it happening. Rather unimpressive 7 wins that they got last year. But I guess I should restate that. I was quite impressed they actually won 7 games last year. Just they didn't do it in a very good manner week in and week out. A couple good wins here and there, but you know, when you look at a 7-win team, I think that was been down as bad as they have been. You're expecting much more of a building block team, and they don't seem to be like that. The Bengals, I can't remember a more uninspiring team that's made it to the playoffs 4 straight years or 3 straight years, however how many they've made it. Now, I can't remember watching a team and just being very unimpressed with them season to season because, like I am with the Bengals, because this Bengals team, although they seem to have talent, I still think they made the wrong decision after the 2013 season. They should have fired Marvin Lewis and promoted one of their coordinators, who both went off and got head coaching jobs after that year. They both went kind of different directions last season, too, when you look at where Zimmer went with the Vikings and where Jay Gruden went with the Redskins. So I think for me, the smart money is on the Steelers because they seemed like they've retooled over the last 2 years, and they've done a good job of making their team better while still being competitive. The Ravens, you know, a big reason I don't like the Ravens is because they're bringing in Mark Trestman, and I have a feeling that Joe Flacco is going to end up regressing with him as his offensive coordinator. The Bengals, I don't think I'm still ready to say that Andy Dalton is a good enough quarterback to win that division and go further. And then the Browns, I just don't see any value in playing, in taking them. Now, their win totals, let's see what we've got here. Let's start it off with the Steelers. They are at 8.5. We've got the... They're all up here. Cleveland is at 6.5. The Bengals are at 8.5. And the Ravens are at 9. So, what do you like there? Anyone that you're thinking could or should not be played?
You know, the Bengals over 8.5 could be a possibility. You know, like we said, they made the playoffs the last few seasons. They haven't necessarily been impressive. I do like Andy Dalton. I think he is somewhat of an underrated quarterback, even though he did sign a very big contract last time. But I see them getting over 8.5 wins. The Ravens, like you said, with Trestman, that one could be, you know, a possibility that Flacco's numbers take a hit. But the offense, when he came to the Bears, was pretty potent in his first season. You know, Cutler wasn't necessarily putting up all-world numbers. But it could be, you know, something of a different look for the Ravens to have. Hopefully he switches up his playbook, which was, you know, everybody knew what plays were coming when he was here in Chicago. But I could see the Ravens being under 9 wins this year because of the fact that Trestman isn't necessarily the offensive genius that a lot of people thought he was. So I like
9?
Cincinnati, I believe.
Oh, so you like going over with Cincinnati. Baltimore under 9 is paying at plus 105. So we are getting a little bit of plus money there, which is good to see. The Browns over 6.5 is paying plus 118. So a lot of people not having faith in the Browns. They're going under right now with them. And 6.5, kind of a low number, so surprisingly there. And then let's see, where were the Steelers? The slight favorite for the Steelers is to be under 8.5 wins. It's paying -105, so just a small lean there on the Steelers. I could see that number moving up really fast right before the season, with people taking the over, because 8.5 does seem a little low for the Steelers team, which I think they can do a pretty easy walkthrough to get 9 wins this season. I don't see them under 500. So, 8 wins is definitely a possibility right there to be at 500, but I most likely see them winning at least 9. Some of the Super Bowl odds are, let's start with the AFC odds. Ravens to win the AFC is at +935. We've got Cincinnati +1673, Cleveland at +6256, and Pittsburgh at +1106. Do you like any of those teams? If they were to make, or depending on which teams make the playoffs, do you like any of them to actually win the conference and go to the Super Bowl this year?
For the AFC North?
Yes.
I do not like any of those teams to win the conference or go to the Super Bowl. I just don't have any confidence in them whatsoever. The odds for them to win, obviously the Ravens have the best odds, followed by the Bengals. The Ravens followed by the Steelers and then the Bengals. So right now, just to win the division, I'd probably stick with the Steelers, but I don't think they have any real way to win the conference and win the Super Bowl.
I've got to say, I'm looking over the odds to win the AFC, and this is just kind of in general, not just specific to the AFC North, but I'm not really liking any of these teams right now. The Patriots, obviously, they're always going to be there. I think the Colts, not so much because I think they're good, mostly because I don't think anyone else is that good. This is a very unimpressive group of teams that I'm looking right now at the AFC, and that could probably will change a lot by the midway point of the season. But, outside of the Broncos, the Colts, and the Patriots, I don't see anyone that's really jumping off the page at me that's saying, hey, you've got to come and bet this right now. So it's kind of a little discouraging, especially because the AFC has been pretty strong for a number of years now. And, it just kind of feels like right now there's a couple of big names and everyone else is just in that middle pack and not very impressive one way or the other. You got a team that you like dark horse-wise for the AFC?
I think if I was looking at it dark horse-wise, the one that has the biggest payout is obviously the Browns. But, the Browns – or, I'm sorry, the Jaguars, which have no shot, or the Raiders or the Browns or the Titans.
Titans are above them.
Yeah, 11,000. Yeah, that's huge. The Broncos are – behind the Colts and the Patriots, I could see them possibly being a dark horse, or even the Ravens right now at that +935. That's a pretty large number for a team that hasn't been that bad over the past few seasons. But I, like you said, it's a very unimpressive group of teams right now that we're looking at. So there's no real front runner that's really catching our eye to, put the money on.
Yeah, I'm right with you on that one. So, all right, well, we'll shelf this conversation for another week. I think there's a lot of good stuff to talk about with both conferences, so we will get on those. Any last words? We've got about 30 seconds.
No, just make sure you get those picks in. That's it.
All right, sounds good. Well, for the Catracho and J.A., thank you guys for listening. Be sure to check us out on Twitter and send me an email if you guys have any questions about the show or about our plays. So send me an email to spread@coverthatspread.com. For the Red Light Sports Network and Cover That Spread, get your bets in on time, guys. Take care, and may the spread be forever in your favor.